Good morning, everybody. It is the 1st of April. Nothing foolish happens to you today. I'd like to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 5024, the HEC budget, and invite Mr. Cannon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the HEC. Pleased to jump back into our presentation related to the community college portion of the budget. As you've noted, there are a number of folks here to describe in great detail, I expect, the work of the community colleges. As we opened this phase of the presentation yesterday, I noted the way in which colleges, community colleges, really are the engine of 40-40-20, given their contributions to each part of that goal. I'm going to turn it over to our interim commissioner, Jim Middleton, to lead us through the sort of framing slides before we ask the representatives of the institutions to provide some testimony. I will note, again, the letter that we've supplied in response to questions that arose during yesterday's conversation. Let me just note, point out a couple of things here without going over it in any detail. One, Co-Chair Monroe concluded, I think, the hearing yesterday with a really important question that asked, related to the a comparison of tuition and state investment in community colleges in 2007 and today. And we're working on that analysis. We have significant portions of it. Want to bring it back to you when we've completed it. We're going ahead and doing the same thing for public universities and state investments in financial aid, so we can get a true sort of across-the-board comparison of where we were in 2007 and where we are today. We have noted, again, some of the responses to questions that rose about GED, around tuition buy-down, around the FAFSA. As usual, if you have questions about anything that we've addressed in the letter, please feel free to follow up with me or a member of our staff.
Madam Co-Chair.
Good morning, Ben. I really appreciate that you have identified the cost, the current cost for the GED assessments. They're now $35. It's my understanding they used to be $8. That has become a barrier to students.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, so what we've supplied here compares the cost today with the costs in 2002. We'd have to go back and see what they were before that. In 2002, they were $38 per test. They've actually come down in price from they were $35 a test in 2002. They're now $38 a test, so that's an increase. But students take one fewer tests, resulting in an overall savings for the full series. But the $8 figure may be an older one. We'd be happy to explore that.
Mr. Chair, follow.
Go ahead.
Ben, I was probably wrong, so don't worry about it. But, Mr. Chair, I do have one other thing.
Go ahead.
I want to let Mr. Middleton know that the community colleges can't survive without him, and your retirement has been revoked.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate that.
Ben, go ahead.
I'm going to turn it over now to
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp Committee. My wife will be talking to you this afternoon, sending you a very direct message. So thank you very much.
Jim, my wife has wanted to retire for a long time, and she's still here.
This is the one slide we sort of got through yesterday as we looked at what the POP was and the debt service, and I think we can move on from here. We will see, Senator Monroe, that the number we are coming up with is going to be significantly north of even the 535 or the 550 as we work our way through that. You know, this, I think the important element that this, I want to comment on, that we have this balance between our state focus and a local focus, and our community colleges are a mosaic that serves the entire state. The white areas are areas that are not in a district and do not pay supporting taxes to a district. Some of the colleges then enter into contract relationships with communities in that to provide focus services. Again, much of this overlaps with what we've talked in other areas, but each year we provide thousands, tens and tens of thousands of students with the opportunity to advance education and develop their skills. The comprehensive mission that you'll also hear described by some of my colleagues, our work that we talked about yesterday on adult literacy and English language as a second language, our adult continuing education, much of which is non-credit and is not state-supported, the accelerated high school learning, the lower division transfer work, and the career and technical education. We do not have a technical college system in Oregon. We do support STEM and career education, but we are much more than that. We are all of these elements, and what's important is embracing that comprehensive mission. The community colleges also are deeply ingrained with their local economies. They provide local businesses with customized workforce training and additional services through our small business development centers. And in many of our communities, particularly our smaller communities, they really are the lifeline to getting businesses started, sustaining, and growing. We're supported by 17 locally governed community college districts. HEC does not govern us. HEC is a coordinating board. And I think that delicate dance is working well at this point as we try to work through the advantages of having that local focus at the same time trying to have statewide collaboration and cooperation. CCWD supports those local districts, coordinates with them, also then operates the central office in the interests of those 17 colleges, the Oregon Educational Investment Board, and the HEC priorities. And then CCWD is also the bridge to other departments and agencies, workforce, employment, K-12, and the universities. So again, that sense of comprehensiveness and networked elements and networked framework is much of what we are about. Next, please. This is somewhat repetitive, but again, we have the institutional boards that are maintained at our local colleges. And the HEC activity right now are improving system approaches, though we are not a system. So if you are in a state that really does have a community college system, then the state level agency is really governing. But we really are working through a coordinating function. All of the program approval does come through HEC. That's part of where that is concerned. HEC deals with some of the rules of engagement as we look at geographic overlap, we look at university and community college overlap. Also then is able to support some of the research and best practice initiatives, and one of the elements that we do have within the legacy of the State Board of Education budget now being taken over by HEC is within the department agency budget, a strategic fund that assists us in defining particular projects that are to the benefit of all of the institutions. This is a 13-year shot at enrollment, and at first you'd look at this and go, you know, what went wrong back in 2001? It's at that time period that the legislature determined to no longer fund the continuing education courses. There's still a small set of those that are business and health related that are funded. but most of the avocational courses were defunded at that period of time. This is headcount, not full-time equivalent, but you can see that we dropped from 406 to 330,000, you know, almost a 10% decline in total headcount enrollment. The reason why that's such a large drop in headcount enrollment is many of those students and citizens who were taking the continuing ed courses were just taking one course for one night, even take a photography class or something of that sort. But we maintain that on a cost base, on a cost recovery basis at the colleges, and those courses are often the things that get citizens to the campus, and they start to see what education is about, and then is often a bridge to career training, transfer, and other kinds of elements. So the, while no longer funded by the state, those elements are still very much an important part of what we do.
And
we,
Jim,
yes,
those continuing education type courses tied the community to the college in many ways and enhanced their opportunity to pass bonds. So I, of course, you know, a lot of bad things happened when I wasn't here. That was during
April
the time
Fools,
that I
yeah,
was
no.
I was on the Metro Council instead of in the legislature, and had to come back in 06 and sort of straighten things out.
Roblin. Yeah, I just want to say, I was going to say exactly the same comment. Community colleges became less community college at that particular time, and it has been an uphill battle since then to get that engagement in our communities that they had. And being not here at Zellwell at the time, it was a disappointing thing to watch happen. And I insist that we need to figure out a way to get some of that back, because it was an amazing part of our community to have all the citizens think of it as their school, and they wanted to be there. And it may just be an art class, it may be something else, but it changed the community when that happened.
Yeah.
In a negative way.
Okay.
Co-chairs Monroe, Comp Committee, thank you. You read your script quite well. I think what this points out, though, those of this is no longer state-funded in these areas. It really does depend on the institutions being financially stable, that they have the ability to transfer some funds from the general fund to support those activities. It becomes either that, or it becomes offering only what can totally pay its own way, which significantly can restrict the range of options that are out there. But it is very much, I think, as you point out, Senator Roblin, the gateway to the institution, to education for many of our students. So from 2003, go back, I'm sorry for just a minute, from 2003 through 2010, we started on a fairly steady increase in enrollment. The combination then of the funding situation, the funding per student declining, and on the positive side, the economy getting a bit better and individuals having the opportunity to work, greater access to jobs, has resulted in a decline over the past several years. But we still remain at or above where we were for quite a large portion of that period. Thank you. As has been mentioned and Ben so eloquently indicated, you know, we are part of all three pieces of the 40-20-20. In the we're working on our terminology here. I'm not sure whether it's the lower 20, the first 20. We do, as we discussed yesterday, provide the GED, the adult basic ed, the English language, the adult high school diplomas, our partnership with the K-12 districts in advising early grade orientation. I know some of the, you know, we talk about graduation ceremonies. I know my time when I was at Central Oregon, we would do an orientation program for middle schoolers and do a college graduation ceremony for them and hand them out, you know, a little diploma and have paper caps. But that kind of sense of a student thinking of themselves as a potential college student is important. So much of that outreach is working with attitude, not just curriculum and not just the teacher partnerships. And then our partnership with the high schools in providing high school-based career technical education. The middle 40 is where we live, and it's where we make our important contributions. The lower divisional transfer, as I'll mention here shortly, without the community college effective transfer programs, we would not have the productivity of university baccalaureate attainment that we do in the state. We are a very major part of students' lives and pathway and financial savings of getting to a baccalaureate. There's then our career technical credentials, as mentioned yesterday, the career ladder, the pathway programs. Are less than one-year certificates, two-year certificates, all job-oriented. And then our transfer programs that we mentioned yesterday that come in several flavors. The OEIB equity lens has been an important part of OEIB, HEC, and the individual community college areas. This echoes a slide that you saw earlier in Ben's initial presentation, our goal being the 40-40-20. At this point, we are only hitting 17% achievement on that middle 40. And for underrepresented racial and ethnic subgroups, we're only at 13%. I will, though, say share some slides here shortly that show that we're making significant progress in that area, though we still have a significant important distance to go. Also, you know, sort of, we can go back, excuse me, on that for a second. The middle 40 is where we need to make the most significant progress. The university goal of 40, they're at 31. They're within sight of the finish line. We have a long way to go in that middle 40. Thank you. When we talk about 40-40-20, we've been talking about the pipeline. And the pipeline is assuming that we put a kindergartner in the pipeline and they go all the way through and come out at the baccalaureate end. And OEIB has basically looked at their goal being with the students who are basically started kindergarten 2 years ago, being those who are educated in the year 2025. We asked the question of the Department of Employment, though, what percentage of the workforce of the year 2025 is in the workforce today? Their answer is that is 82%. So even if we were 100% successful with the pipeline in 2025, that focus would only touch 18% of the workforce in the year 2025. So many of that 82% do have degrees and are educated that are in our workforce now, but many of them are not and need to be retooled, upgraded, and assisted to become part of the engine that we need for social as well as economic vitality. So all of the data that we're working on appropriately, you got to start with some focus, has been on the pipeline, but a very major portion of the community college focus is reaching beyond that. You can see this in the next slide because we look at our age distribution. Basically, the pipeline are the first two bars. Those who are 15 or less, early students who are starting with some college credit, fairly small. And then the 16 to 19-year-olds, the standard recent high school graduate. But that is only 20%, you know, of our enrollment. So we're dealing with that other 82% of the workforce of the year 2025 who are looking to change their lives, upgrade themselves, and move forward. Also, what distinguishes and creates some challenges for us as we look at data tracking is that full-time students represent only 9% of our enrollment. When we do some of the national studies, IPEDS, for instance, deals with first-time, full-time students. And so when they give data on the community college, it's a subset of that 9% that then is statistically representing 100% of the community college students. And that's one of the reasons when you get some of the community college data when it comes out, we look at it seriously, but we also very appropriately say, yes, but, because those studies are focusing really predominantly on that 9%. When we look at the distribution of where we spend our time, just over half of our work is in the lower divisional collegiate, the transfer programs, and that also includes the general education areas that are required of students in the career and technical. The career technical, a little over one quarter of what we have, developmental 10%, the adult basic skills 8%, and then non-reimbursable and the adult continuing ed. Those are the areas that I talked about where we saw the significant drop off, and those now are significantly down from where they once were. This is, and I took your warning, Senator Monroe, when this slide goes all the way from 0 to 100. So we didn't clip this one to make it more dramatic. But this is what we have done at the community colleges in the last 7 years as far as minority enrollment, both as a percentage and in raw numbers. So the large bars represent raw number of underrepresented students. And so we moved from 51,000 to almost 67,000 students in a seven-year period. So we look at about a 40% increase in enrollment of underrepresented minorities. The line graph below shows what that represents as a percentage of the total enrollment. So you can have your raw numbers go up, but if enrollment is expanding, your percentage could actually drop. But this has gone up also dramatically. That's where we see the 40% improvement, moving from 20% to 28% of total student enrollment at our community colleges. Also notice, if you remember that slide where we showed enrollment dropping off as a total at the community colleges, total enrollment has been dropping off, but our targeted minority enrollment has continued to increase. I'll speak a little bit later about the issue and how we're responding to some of the moves toward looking at outcomes-based funding, which are designed to provide incentives and rewards that also would include this area. But I think it's very important to emphasize that even before any such emphasis and focus, the community colleges are making significant progress in the right direction with where our state priorities are. Again, this echoes what you've seen before, our work with dual credit high school students. Again, a very positive seven-year path of continued partnership and raw numbers of more and more students in our high schools getting college credit. Again, an area I think I share great pride with my colleagues is looking at total degrees and certificates awarded. A lot of national attention being given to students being at the institution but not getting to the finish line. And part of this growth is because we did have the enrollment upsurge, but this has been a steady increase. The dark line looking at associate degrees awarded, doubling in that seven-year period. The certificates, very dramatic, almost about a six-fold increase, moving from 1,600 of those to over 8,600 being awarded. So it's carefully packaging the curriculum, particularly with those certificates, as I mentioned to you yesterday, looking at providing credentials along the pathway rather than just defining the total finish line of the race. And again, I think that our performance as I drew out the Hispanic students because they represent the largest number of our targeted minority enrollment students. even more dramatic increase in achievement with these students, moving from just 324 degrees awarded in 2006 to over 1,000 awarded in 2013, a 236% increase. And with the certificates moving from 75 to over 700, a tenfold increase in the number of those certificates awarded. So I think a very conscious focus on trying to serve Hispanic students and make them, again, part of the engine of both social and economic development within the area.
Jim, do we know what the overall growth of the Hispanic population in Oregon as a percentage of the total? I know it's been significant, but during that same period of time, I mean, it would be good comparison if we knew, you know, the growth of the Hispanic population in Oregon during that, what, 10, 8-year period of time compared to this?
Yes, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, we can get you that data. I don't, you know, have it in front of me at this point, but I think that we're doing well in comparison to that, you know, as the path, but it is not just a product of our success, but also that the number of individuals in those categories has increased.
Yeah, there's been a significant increase. I'm assuming that this growth is even greater than that increase, but it'd be nice to have those numbers.
Thank you. We'll get that for you. I've heard this question asked a number of times, and this is one that is a bit more of a concern point for us as we look about focus on economic development. This answers the question, well, what's happened to career and technical as we're trying to focus in that area? As the dollars have gotten tighter from 2001 to 2013, the percentage of what we offer in the career and technical has dropped from about 33% to 26%. So those are the more expensive programs. This is not merely that we're shutting down programs, it's also a product of where students have chosen to go. And there was a higher percentage of students choosing the university transfer path. But I do know from my own experience and that of my colleagues, it has been challenging to add new career technical programs, to expand those programs, and very often those are lost leaders for institutions, particularly as we look at areas like healthcare, where when you move out into the hospital, you have a 1-to-8 student-teacher ratio when you go out there. So that's something we do need to pay attention to, and is again one of those areas that if we see overall strength in the institutional budgets, they have a greater ability to put assets in those areas. The other area of looking at success with that comprehensive mission is the number of transfers. Again, very positive movement in the last 12 to 13 years, moving from 4,159 students to basically in the last 3 years that we measured around 7,000 students in those areas. So again, about more than a 50% increase in transfers to the university.
And again, Jim, do you have equal numbers for those community college students that have transferred to our private universities?
I think we have that data. Because
I know that a number of our private universities and private colleges have a relationship with the local community colleges and do encourage that kind of transfer.
Yeah, and I think we've seen some creative outreach at both our public and our private institutions and increased interest in defined articulation agreements with the community colleges, too. So I think there's been good partnerships with both of those university groups.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
The community colleges, you know, currently we are, when we talk about where the requests are, they are aligned with what the state and the HEC priorities have been. They have been focused on the general funding levels to get us back to where we are and to allow us to begin to make real progress toward 40-40-20, so that that is a plan for 40-40-20, not a prayer for 40-40-20 or merely a hope for 40-40-20. Second focus is on affordability, the new investment in Oregon Opportunity Grant, discussion about free community colleges, pay it forward, tuition policy. There's a whole constellation of very appropriate focus on affordability for our students. Alignment, looking at the aspect of aligning with K-12 to improve accelerated learning, our dual credit in both directions, dual credit with our K-12 partners and with the universities, and then improving and streamlining our placement processes. Beginning to work on proposals for outcome-based funding, and then continuing our efforts in the workforce training. So we'll give you a revised one here based on your request, Co-Chair Monroe, but this is what the state investment has been. We hit our peak in 2007. Nine, in just under $500 million, and then the governor's proposed proposal was basically getting back to that level. I think it's important to see that we're getting back to that level, and as we do that, inflation adjusted, it actually, as we will provide the data for you, needs to be higher. But I must say that it's important not just to look at 15-17 and 7-9. It is saying, recognizing that there are real consequences of that of not just deferred maintenance in terms of deferred renovation of facilities, but other technology purchases, library support services, other elements that were deferred or put aside during that period that we basically have to rebuild. So it's not just getting back to that point, but it is trying to look at making up for some of the reality choices that had to be made during that period. On a positive note, local resources through property taxes have been improved percentage-wise more significantly last year, and with real estate recovery, we are anticipating that we will see a positive trajectory in that direction. Again, as part of...
made this graph, didn't know about Monroe's rule. Go ahead.
This also is a partial answer to your question, Senator Monroe, from yesterday. This is our annual average in-district tuition fees and tuition, and compared to WICHE, which is the Western states. Our KPM target, key performance measure target, is to have Oregon tuition be the fifth lowest in the West. Currently, we are 13th out of the 15. So as we look at that green bar compared to the black, we are really not close, not just in raw numbers, but where we believe we should be relative to our comparative other states in the West. Outcomes-based funding has been an element of discussion among the community college presidents, OCCA, the state board, and now HEC, for almost 3 years that we've been discussing and looking at options and approaches. It is a major national point of debate and movement. About 35 states have some form of outcomes-based funding. Briefly, our current funding system is based on enrollment only. We measure the number of students that we have the fourth week of class, and that is what the base of measurement is for the community colleges. We have been working collaboratively with the Finance Committee of HEC and with the HEC Board and with the Presidents, looking at what adjustments could be made that add some component of outcomes-based funding, where we shift a portion
not all by any means, a portion of the data that directs the funds to the different institutions to look at what are the results, not just how many students are sitting in seats at a particular time.
And I think that's absolutely critical. You know, our resources need to go where they'll do the most good. And when we have high-paying job programs going wanting because we turn students away, then something's wrong with the way we're funding things and the formula. And so I'm looking forward to your recommendations as we craft the funding for community colleges. One of the things we're going to be doing next at $535 million or more, and how we distribute those funds.
Senator Murrow's representative committee, yes, we are trying to look at balancing, moving, and keeping momentum, but also doing it the right way. This slide represents where the current tentative proposal lies that we have been discussing with the Finance Committee and with the HEC Board. It really looks at seven areas where we would measure results, broken out into three major categories. The first would be pre-collegiate preparation. So it would look at how many courses are we providing to high school students, how is one college doing in comparison to another, and having a more active institution get some financial benefit over one that would be less in that area. It also looks at student success for those students who are placed in remediation or developmental education. How are we doing at moving them forward, not just how many are we putting into remediation? Secondly, it looks at progression. Within the year, how many students are we getting to 15 units or 30 units during the academic year? Again, tilting some financial incentive and reward to those who achieve a bit more in these areas. And then finally, three areas of completion: certificates awarded, associate degrees awarded, and transfers. Success in those areas will be weighted higher for students who are Pell students, lower income students, and for students in underrepresented groups. Currently, we're proposing that that would be a 40% bonus that could be additive. So if you had a Hispanic Pell receiving student, for every success point that that student hits, they would generate 1.8 points in comparison to the base one. It also has a weighting system proposed so that colleges could represent somewhat their differential missions, so that if a college is more transfer, more completion oriented, they could tilt the metrics in that direction. If they were very heavily, due to demographics, focused on remediation and partnership with their local K-12 district, they could tilt their metrics a little bit, but not all the way in that direction. In addition, at the bottom, there's two areas that we want to study: job placement and workforce training. We are not yet confident we have the right measures that are appropriate in those areas. I respect the challenge that we have in seeing that we get measures that are actual measurements of the thing we're trying to measure, and that they are consistent and attainable data. Those are challenges, and there are some data challenges and data noise that we have in those elements that will need some significant attention at both the local campus level and at the state level. And then lastly, these are new proposed KPMs that we are adding that we will be monitoring as we look through. Again, no surprises. They overlap virtually everything we've been talking about, and that's nice to see that there is consistency as far as that's concerned. Our number of students that we're awarding to high school diplomas, GEDs, those who are in that 15 to 29 credit range, the 30 to 45, those who earn at least the 45, the certificates, the associate degrees awarded, the ratio of our degrees and certificates completed compared to total credits, and the number who are transferring each year, all in congruence with the institution's comprehensive mission. I thank you for the opportunity to present this material. I'm willing to answer any questions before we turn some time over to the campus colleagues.
Are there additional questions for Jim? Thank you very much. This is very good. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. We'd like to invite the representatives of campuses to present to you to get so that you can get a perspective from those who are directly on the ground doing this work. And I think, Andrea, do you want to sort of choreograph this?
Mr. Chair, there should be a presentation that has a cover that looks like this on today's schedule for OLIS.
Okay.
And it's right there.
You go down here, put your thing on there.
This one right here? Good morning.
Good to see you again. Thank you. For the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And we have presentations for you from the campuses to hear from both presidents, board members, students, and business partners with some greater detail about community colleges, why we do what we do, and a little bit about the budget realities that community colleges are facing right now. So we are going to, I will be sitting up here and bring up various folks to speak, and we'll try to make this as seamless as possible. We wanted to start today by talking about why we do what we do for community colleges and the difference we make for our students. We'll really focus on that today, and then tomorrow move into more of the specifics around the budget. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mary Spieldy, our president of Lane Community College. And I do want to recognize that it's not just April 1st, but it is Mary's birthday today. So Mary.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, and just so you know, Senator, Representative Barker's birthday today as well. So if you see a representative running around in a tuxedo, it's his birthday as well. So you have a common person.
I should have worn my tuxedo. So good morning, Senator Monroe, Representative Comp, members of the committee. We're very glad to share information today about community colleges. For the record, my name is Mary Spieldy. I'm in my 35th year serving Oregon's community colleges and have been president of Lane Community College for 14 years. I've served at the national level as chair of the American Association of Community Colleges Board of Directors, and I'm currently on the board of the League for Innovation in Community Colleges. As Andrea mentioned, I've been asked to kind of take a step back from the detail of our budget and start off by trying to answer a very fundamental question. Why? Why community colleges? Why do we do what we do in our communities? Why are we essential to our communities in the state and employers and a healthy economy? And why does any of this matter? I think we who work in community colleges are very passionate about this last question. Why do community colleges matter? Well, I think we matter because we are democracy's colleges. We've been charged with providing access to higher education as a right, not a privilege, to the most underrepresented, the most underserved, the most underprepared, the poorest, and the most first-generation students in our state. For those students who are willing to be responsible and work hard. And we're asked to do that with the least amount of funding per student of any education sector. And there's lots of evidence to support that contention, but I'll come back to that in a moment. In addition to access, we are charged with developing pathways for these students to achieve their dreams and to achieve success. As you will hear, Oregon's community colleges did not wait to be told to focus on student success as well as access. Instead, when we were at the lowest level of funding in decades, we redoubled our efforts to innovate and initiate strategies to assure quality, progression, and completion. Our challenge now is to scale these efforts so that every single student, the top 100% can take advantage of them, and that takes resources. Lane was founded in 1964. This is our 50th anniversary, and that was the same year as the Civil Rights Act passed. And that was no accident, because back then we believed in opportunity for all. We believed in a social contract that said, if you do your part and work responsibly, state government and local taxpayers will cover 80% of the bill for higher education. Why did we do that? Because we knew that without access to higher education, some people, the poorest and disenfranchised, would be left behind, that they would never enter the economic mainstream and would be destined to a life of social services and dependence. We knew then, and I believe we still know, that providing access benefits all of us. The advent of community colleges, however, in the 60s changed that equation. Instead of relegating a certain segment of our citizens to the lowest rung, we raised them up. However, fast forward 50 years, and we see that we have not kept our part of the bargain. Now student tuition represents almost 50% of local budgets, as opposed to 20% just 15 years ago when I became president of Lane Community College. This trajectory results in a slow, crippling decline in the infrastructure that America and Oregon depends on, our people. Our economic growth and our resiliency is built upon our success in educating our citizenry. 25 years ago, we had the best we were the best educated nation in the world, and that is no longer the case. So why are we important to employers and the economy? Well, we all know that our economy is changing rapidly. We don't yet know the names of the jobs of the future or the skills that they will require. Tony Carnevale at Georgetown University confirms that the single most important lever for creating economic opportunity and determines who will get the jobs that command a middle-class salary is education, and that the almost 30 million middle-class jobs in today's job market require education beyond high school, and this will only increase in the future. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important that community colleges maintain their comprehensive mission of providing career and technical education, lower division preparation for baccalaureate degrees, foundational skills to prepare for college-level work and lifelong learning. Oregon community colleges have a long and successful history of combining both the theoretical and practical knowledge needed to produce not only skilled workers that fuel economic recovery, but the innovation and adaptability necessary to respond to the seismic shifts in our current job market. One of the challenges we face as community colleges is to tell our story and show how we are different, and so that we are not viewed by policymakers solely through the university paradigm. And this is a huge challenge for us. And I think we have to recognize that there are really two distinct but connected forms of American higher education. The first consists of those public or private colleges that select their incoming class each fall by recruiting and admitting those students who have a high probability of being able to complete their degrees. And then we have community colleges who are radically inclusive. The difference between the colleges in these two categories, those that select and those who take in everyone, is profound. We need both, but the distinctive purpose of American community colleges, this radical experiment in the democratization of higher education, is only imperfectly realized, and that needs to change. This stratification can be seen in the work from the Delta Project on post-secondary education, costs, productivity, and accountability. And I'll get those graphs to you, but if you haven't seen them, they're very telling because they show quite clearly the investments we're making as a state and as a country in private school education and the investments that we're making in community colleges. They also show that over 10 years, 1999 to 2009, the change in spending per pupil in private education went up $13,000, and in community college education went up $1 in 10 years, what we're spending. This is a tragedy. So this stratification is playing out in what is happening with our students as well. Our college reflects the changing face of America. Our students defy what traditional college students look like. They're older, Most work at least part-time, many full-time. They struggle financially. More than two-thirds of our students report that their family income is $25,000 or less. At Lane, 74% of our students qualify for the full Pell Grant, and I believe that's the highest rate in the state. We educate nearly half of the undergraduates in this country, and yet 85% of the incoming white students to higher education in the United States are attending selective four-year schools, while 72% of incoming Latino students, 68% of African-American students go to two-year colleges. And we know that the achievement gap is pernicious and its roots run deep. So I think we have to ask ourselves what's wrong with this picture. We are spending the most on the most likely to succeed and the least on the least likely to succeed. Does this make sense when we need every single person to enter the economic mainstream and become an empowered worker and an active citizen? Given the demographics of this state, the Latino population has gone up 64% in Oregon in the last census in 2010. I think this becomes an even more urgent imperative if we want to have a healthy Oregon. Without a deeper investment, the 17 community colleges across the state will be slowly closing the door to those who need the education the most. For those of us who work at community colleges, this isn't a job. It really is a calling, because we get to see student after student find themselves. They find they have a brain, they develop aspirations, and they go beyond what they thought was possible. When I first came to Oregon, I couldn't find a job. Female Scottish lawyer in Scio, Oregon, just wasn't working for me. But when I did land a job teaching at Lynn Benton Community College, it was the start of a love affair with the community college mission and our students, and that passion has endured for 35 years, although I have to say I'm getting tired of sitting up here asking for money. When I think of our students and the challenges that so many of them face, it really is a privilege to do this work. Community colleges are a unique American invention. They give students the opportunity to achieve their dreams, to live in a democracy where everyone, not just a privileged few, has a chance to create a good life for themselves and their family. That's a core belief that we have at Lane, and I believe in all community colleges. So I just want to end by bringing a few students figuratively into the room. You'll hear from students later, but I think of Alex San Pedro, who lived on the streets of San Francisco and Eugene at age 15 and dealt with alcoholism and depression until he found Lane Community College. He received the Jack Kent Cook Scholarship, an amazing scholarship, and transferred to Pratt Institute in New York to complete his bachelor's degree in art. He says that after receiving this prestigious scholarship and being at Lane, he says, "I began to look at the world differently, with hope, possibility, and opportunity." Alex worked with the homeless youth at the Al Forney Center and as an English as a second language tutor and teacher's assistant with AmeriCorps. After completing his Master's of Fine Art in Sculpture, he will teach art. He says, "I am passionately committed to visual exploration as a medium for promoting cross-cultural exchange of ideas and emotions, and to the educational process and appreciation of art." Valerie is a single mother with a special needs child, and she came to Lane. She studied environmental science and got involved with the Native American and Black student unions. She transferred to Oregon State and graduated cum laude with a master's in national resource sustainability. After that, she accepted a fellowship with the National Science Foundation, and now she's doing doctoral work at SUNY Buffalo, focusing on watershed restoration on tribal lands. And finally, Jason is a physical therapy assistant student at Lane. He went from high school to a life of traveling and working in the music industry in Nashville, where he graduated from Nashville Community College. He planned to get a bachelor's degree, but then his younger brother, a senior at the U of O, was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Jason and his family returned to Eugene, and he became a caregiver for his brother. That experience brought him to a new calling in physical therapy so that he could get help people in need. His brother passed in 2009, and Jason said, "Even though I wasn't able to work on him as my patient, I look forward to helping others recover from illness and injury." These are just three stories, and I know that you know many stories of community college students where the community college has literally saved their lives. These student stories are what makes me get up in the morning to go out and what needs to be done. If you'll indulge me, since it is my birthday, I want to read you a poem. And it's called Community College, and it was written by one of our English faculty. It's called Community College. I love the stained carpets, the broken equipment, the valiant IT guys who keep trying to fix things, showing up like Jedi with giant coffee cups. I love the single remaining hard-used computer lab and the inadequate parking that brings out students' predatory instincts. I love that there have been fistfights over spaces and that everyone drives a junker. I love the cafeteria line, where we who were never fed at home can get turkey and dressing every Thursday and tacos reliably on Tuesdays. I love the part-time adjunct faculty working like the crew of the nation's Titanic to unlock the gates and steerage for those coming up behind them. I love the teenagers with pierced lips and the old heavyweights like me, struggling for breath on the stairs, hauling $500 worth of knowledge in a backpack on wheels. I love the thrill and terror in the eyes of these people who have seen it all and still not given up. And yes, I love even the swastika tattoo I glimpsed on someone's back in the financial aid line, because it is behind him now, because he is here for something more than skin deep, something more painful than ink. He is here to learn something he does not already know. So this is a critical crucible moment for us. It's time for us to step back up to the social contract that we made 50 years ago when Lane was started. We need the investment so that we can continue to transform lives. We have very high expectations of ourselves. We also have very high expectations of you. It will take a combination of smart programming, and we can do that, but also significant achievement to achieve our lofty goals. So thank you for listening.
Well, thank you very much for coming on your birthday. That's really exciting. There are members of this panel, I want you to know, that really value age and experience.
Good.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mary, can we get a copy of the poem?
Absolutely. Thank Barbara you. Sullivan, our faculty member, has given me permission to share it widely.
Thank you.
We have a state representative whose birthday is today, too, Jeff Barker, except he's got a tux on.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe and competent members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you on a very important issue to us, as Mary has already indicated, and it is a privilege to follow President Spielde on her birthday. It's also daunting. For the record, my name is Greg Heyman. I'm the president of Lynn Benton Community College. I have served in education for a little over 30 years. My first 15 years were in four-year private education, so I know the difference personally in the mission, and my moving into the community college I describe as a conversion experience. it was a recognition that in order for us to serve the democratic causes of we as a people and a country, we needed to create an educational opportunity that was extended to everyone and not just to those who had the capacity to get there. So I'm privileged, like President Spielde, to be able to serve at a community college that I love. And I want to talk about sort of where we are at as a state and where we are as a nation in terms of that vision that that Mary described that really is the foundation for our community colleges. I'm going to call your attention to a couple documents. The first one is Reclaiming the American Dream. I do want to point out that President Spielde was one of the national leaders who helped write this document. And I want to read from it quickly. The report begins with this. The American dream is at risk because a highly educated population is fundamental to the economic growth and a vibrant democracy. Community colleges can help reclaim that dream. By stepping up to this challenge, we require dramatic redesign of these institutions, their mission, and most critically, their students' educational experiences. And I want to add to that, our current, the executive director of the American Association of Community Colleges went on to write, and that's Dr. Walter Bumpus. He says, this report is but the beginning of a community college transformation story, and I intend to work with our community college leaders to breathe life into the vision outlined in that commission report, in which students' educational experiences are redesigned, institutional roles are reinvented, and the system itself is reset to meet the needs of their communities, their students, and their nation. That commitment produced another document, which you have, which is an implementation guide. I want to call your attention that President Cam Preuss and myself were involved in the writing of this document. So Oregon has been involved in this work from the beginning, and I think we're proud that all of our 17 institutions are now actively engaged in making that reclaiming of the American dream a reality in the state of Oregon. I want to outline rather quickly the recommendations that came from this report and then talk about some of the ways in which we are already acting on those recommendations here in Oregon. The original report included 7 recommendations. I'll go through them quickly. 1, that we do need to increase the completion rate by 50%. That we do need to dramatically increase college readiness, that we do need to close the American skills gap, which relates to career technical education, that we need to refocus our community college mix and redefine our institutional roles. And I want to be clear here, we don't need to change our mission. Our mission has been and will always be a commitment to that access so that everyone has the opportunity to be a contributing member of a vibrant economy and a rich culture, because we as a people are all better when all of us are contributing members of that. And that mission hasn't changed. But we do know that our focus changes, and the commission goes on to suggest that we move to our focus to some outcomes, to student success, to graduation, to students not just in isolation, but students in communities. That we invest in collaborative support structures, that we target public and private investments strategically, which you have talked about already, that we implement policy and practices that promote rigor and accountability. The second document went on to say, and that there are 4 foundational strategies that are critical to our making these recommendations a reality, and they are 1, that we create clear, coherent academic and career pathways, that we create stackable credentials based on clearly defined competencies, that we create an alignment of learning across the educational sectors within our community colleges and with our labor market demands, with K-12, with our universities, that we create that continuum, and that we create a world of accountability and transparency. Why is this important to Oregon? You know, we toss out the numbers 40-40-20, and Dr. Middleton showed you a little bit about where our numbers lie. The 2010 census actually indicated that only around 8% of our adult population has the certificate or degree that fits into that middle 40. And the issue is sort of how do you define that in relation. But half of our adult population has not completed a degree beyond high school. We're trying to build a vibrant future for Oregon. And in order to do that, we have to dramatically change that middle 40, dramatically change that. And that's what we're committed to doing. How are we committed to doing it? We know that we have a critical role as community colleges. And I just want to outline some of the things that are already in place that we're focusing on that you'll hear about. And that we're critically focused on transition programs and curricular alignment. You hear about the ways in which we're working with universities and with school districts to make sure that the education that we receive at one institution is actually the pathway to success at the next institution or in the labor market. We focus on expanded options and degree partnerships for your institutions on dual credit. You saw the numbers and the ways in which more and more people are taking advantage of the ways in which our curriculum is becoming more and more aligned into a pathway that actually guides students to success. We are working to expand the career technical opportunities in spite of the financial challenges of that commitment. But our business community is demanding of us that we are creating more skilled and more people to fill a rapidly growing area. Manufacturing is being rediscovered in the state of Oregon, and we want to make sure that those positions are filled by Oregonians. And so we are committed to that. We're committed to clearer and shorter remediation pathways. Each one of our institutions is doing things that help students be more successful in their preparation for college-level coursework and a variety of things. At my institution, we're embedding the remediation work into our career technical program, so you're not doing this and then you move on to the thing that you came to college to do, but it comes together in a package, and our students are experiencing much greater success. We are shortening the pathway and sort of getting such as math sequences, where instead of a series of five courses, we're finding ways of compressing that and individualizing it in ways that allow a student to move much more rapidly and therefore move into the work that they came to college to do. And it's I only know my institution's examples best, but I know that every one of the 17 institutions have really amazing examples of the kinds of work that they're doing in those areas. We're working to create clear program pathways so that when a student does determine the outcome, that they can see the course progression within that institution to get them to that goal. We're working for new integrations of technology. At our school, we just opened a new innovations classroom, which is not unique. There are at other institutions, but it doesn't have a front. It's a classroom that focuses on the student, not the teacher. We're working on supporting enhanced advising and educational support services because we find that when we get students into the right class at the time, that we have great teachers and they're capable to support them in the success in that class. What we need to do is guide the student in that progression of classes and support them along their way. And so it takes more than just the faculty in the classroom. It takes the people around them to work with the students. And we're working in all of these ways. And I would suggest that all of these initiatives that we are already involved in demonstrate that we are ready and that we're already moving forward with regards to reclaiming that American dream, not just at our individual institutions, but for us as a state. But we do need your help. The success of all this work depends on adequate and reliable funding. And you've seen the data in terms of which we shift the cost of this instruction and this education more and more onto our students, putting in jeopardy the kind of access that President Spiegel has talked about. And we can't go in that direction. Our mission is about that opportunity for all of our students. And so we ask, we beg that you join with us, that you continue to support the effort of a truly democratic educational opportunity that will be the foundation of Oregon's future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Co-Chair.
I was wondering, how's your retrofit program going down there in Lynn Benton?
Oh,
the engine retrofits.
Oh, that's an exciting. Thank you for Co-Chair Comp. Thank you for bringing that up. Which you're speaking of is our program to retrofit transportation vehicles, trucks. And currently, we're working on all of the vehicles in the Sheriff's Department for Benton County, moving them into an alternative fuel, in this case propane, which reduces the carbon footprint of that operation and also reduces the cost of that program so that they're able to put more people on the street and enhance the public safety of that community. And we are excited to be a part of that. The program is going great. We invite all of you down to see what we're doing there. It is an exciting effort. So,
is this your second year
This is our second year. We will be in June starting the construction of the second phase of that work, which will move our on-road trucking operation into that that effort as well.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
I just want to say I had an opportunity to drive those cars in a nice place in Washington this last summer when we're looking at some alternative energy and regular energy issues, and that some of the instructors from Lynn Benton came up and brought their vehicle, and it was a pretty exciting ride. Mm-hmm. They do perform as well or better than regular gasoline. I was surprised at that. I think a lot of people are surprised at how well those cars perform. So it was really a neat experience, and I appreciate the professors coming to show people some alternatives that are out there. So
thank you, Senator Roebuck.
And just one other follow-up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
I've been, after standing by school buses and doing bus duty for 20-plus years and breathing in all those diesel fumes that our children breathe, I'm always interested in clean fuels for our buses. And I just learned here from the Salem Kaiser Bus Service. I asked him the other day, I said, do you have your buses retrofitted into clean fuels? And he said 50% of them are on a compressed natural gas, and then 50% were on another type of clean energy, some form of biodiesel. And I asked him, because we're always talking about getting more money into our schools, I said, how much are, you know, what's the efficiency? Are you getting the same mileage and all this out of your fleet? And he said, out of the compressed natural gas, they're saving almost 50%. Mm-hmm. And if we, this is my pitch for this legislature, if we retrofitted our school buses and our children didn't have to breathe those terrible diesel fumes, and we could save money that could go into the classroom.
Okay.
That's my pitch for the day.
The day, okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
But it all started from Lynn Benton Community College.
Why don't we go ahead?
Okay. Again, for the record, Andrea Henderson from OCCA. And so as we bring our next speakers up, I know we have 15 minutes left. We do have Cam Preuss from Blue Mountain, who has a board meeting tonight to get back to. So she will come up along with one of her students. And then we have one other student that we get in today who's here for today only. So as you've heard, we have a lot of work that community colleges have done to redesign how we're serving our students, to make sure we're not just giving access to our students, but helping them to succeed and complete. And as Cam is our former commissioner, Dr. Preuss, who's now at Blue Mountain Community College, really led the efforts of creating our Student Success Oversight Committee and really helping to reform the work that we're doing at the community colleges. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Preuss to talk about that work.
Cam, some people just can't stay away from this place. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Senator Monroe. Representative Comp, for the record, Cam Preuss, now president at Blue Mountain Community College for 20 months.
Wow.
Yes, and it was a pleasure to accept the invitation to come back and talk about student success. I want to compliment my colleague, Dr. Middleton. As I saw those slides pop up, I was running through, I'll bet he's going to say. So that's it's just wonderful to be back among friends. I do want to give you a short history of student success, and I appreciate Andrea asking me. It was really a clarion call for community colleges. You just heard Lynn Benton's president, Greg Heyman, talk about a report that came out in 2012 and a follow-up report that came out in 2014. I'm going to back up to 2007. It was in a hearing room very much like this. Senator Schrader had what I would call the bag of money, and it was the 2007 legislative session, and he was agreeing to make an investment in community colleges at a $500 million level, but he wanted a quid pro quo for that investment. He wanted performance. He wanted measurable results. And that was the agreement that we came to. We agreed to a set of performance measures as the 17 colleges. Up until that point, when I came before the legislature, I brought you one big number, the number of completions for all 17 colleges. And I sort of kept to myself what the individual 17 did with that particular measurement. Well, the other thing he wanted was he wanted individual college information, and then he asked, and it was agreed to, that in this, that set of key performance measures, that we would decide, we would find, we would research the colleges that were making the most strides in certain, in those areas, and we would bring those best practices to bear across the 17. Makes sense. Well, it was a bit of a scary proposition because we had never looked at each other individually. We had never compared one college to the other. It's difficult to do when you have a Tillamook Bay that has less than 2,500 students, and you have a college like Portland Community College that has 90,000 students. Comparisons are difficult. But we had agreed to this set of deliverables, and we went to work to collect the data. We discovered in doing this work that the results that the senator and the legislature had asked for and asked us to collect and report on were not necessarily the measures that we thought were most important for student success. So we have the results, but how you get to those results were what he termed the process measures, and he was, and the inputs, and he wasn't as interested in those pieces as he was the outside results. Well, that was fine. We needed to be interested in them, because if we didn't know about them, we couldn't really affect the outcome for students and results. We defined a new set of measures. We coined them the student success indicators, and all colleges agreed to voluntarily collect this information. You heard earlier, we are not a community college system. We are 17 independently operated institutions. We felt it was to in our best interest to collectively move forward with this data. The timing of our work in Oregon corresponded with an increase in national research, and much had been published on evidence-based practice. The timing was also quite fortunate for us because we could steal and copy from others. But about the time we finished the work and brought back our report to the legislature in 2009, you all know what happened. It was the Great Recession, and all that good work couldn't find any funding to support it. And our funding went down, but our commitment went up. In order to organize these efforts and the results across the colleges, we developed a statewide student success oversight committee. It was a cross-functional committee, had everyone from faculty to presidents on it and students. That membership continues to meet today. And it is a committee that has taken seriously and provided leadership to increase outcomes for community college students. The Student Success Committee, as I said, continues to meet, and it provides statewide focus on building student success. Essentially, what we did is we threw out what had been in community colleges for a long time, and that was a passive model. I think everyone would agree we had TRIO programs, which TRIO focuses on a particular set of students, but scaling that TRIO, which is a lot of wraparound services for students, was we knew that those were the right things to do for students, but we didn't have the resources. But what we decided is that passivity, to let students discover for themselves, if you will, in quotations, their education plan and path, and instead we intervened. And we developed models to implement best practice for student retention, persistence, and completion. It's not been an easy initiative, particularly in, as I said, the non-system of Oregon's community colleges. However, using strategic funds from the state level and foundation grants, we've invested in those best practices across the 17. Over the last 5 years, every community college in Oregon has instituted student success-focused practices and wraparound services. And you saw in a slide that was shown earlier that completion is going up, retention is going up. whether it's redesigning developmental education, instituting new student success courses, or tutoring, all are designed to assist students in achieving their educational goals. Every community college has seen an increase in student retention and persistence. Every college has seen an increase in student completion. Whether the student's goal is to transfer to a university, enter the labor force, or enhance their employability. This commitment to student success has been cataloged by a recent Secretary of State performance audit. And that's what you're seeing, that's what this slide is. They are cataloging how many community colleges are doing the evidence-based practice that is comes from national research. At BMCC, we have a motto. That's Blue Mountain Community College, sorry. Where do I give my quarter for using an acronym? We have a motto, and it's called Students First. It's our way of demonstrating that students are at the center of everything we do. We would not exist if we did not have students. We have changed our processes to incorporate evidence-based practice. We have a mandatory new student orientation. We have mandatory faculty advising, and it's coupled with a success coach. We have redesigned our developmental math, and students can jump from one level to the next, and lots of students are. And we encourage all students to take a student success course. The results to date are very promising. We see students that are more engaged with their peers, the faculty and staff, and we see higher rates of completion. And isn't that what it's all about? Putting students and their educational goals first. I'd like to introduce a student from Blue Mountain Community College, Seth Von Eggers. He's a 2014 Blue Mountain grad, and he'd like to share his story with you.
Seth, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe and Co-Chair Comp and members of the committee. I want to start by thanking you for this opportunity to share my experience with BMCC and the community college education. In 2011...
And you have to give us your name.
Oh, Seth Von Eggers. So, yes, cool. For the record, sorry. Seth Von Eggers, a graduate of Blue Mountain Community College, and I'm currently studying business marketing at George Fox University.
Oh, okay.
So,
got there for a while. Go ahead.
In 2011, at the young age of 15, I stepped into a classroom setting for the first time in my entire life. I was homeschooled until this point, so you can imagine the intimidation that I felt at this experience. However, looking back at my time at BMCC, I can see how it really shaped me to become the person I am today. The reason I was able to start college at such a young age was through a program that works with BMCC that allows students to take classes full-time at the community college to earn both a high school diploma and an AA transfer degree. In my second term at Blue Mountain Community College, I joined the Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society, and my last year there, I was selected as Vice President of Public Relations. This experience taught me both great leadership and communication skills through our focus of community service. We initiated many projects that benefited not only BMCC, but the surrounding community as well. Additionally, these projects helped students become more engaged with staff and faculty as well as the other students attending this college. Through the different skills and tools that I learned, I was also selected last year as a Coca-Cola Silver Scholar, as well as selected as a member on the All-Oregon academic team, which meant that I was chosen as one of BMCC's two most outstanding students. Choosing to become involved with Phi Theta Kappa was only one avenue that a student of Blue Mountain Community College can choose. There's a variety of different options to enhance and grow the skills and knowledge that the students can gain that are tailor-fit to the variety of students that attend Blue Mountain Community College. I've seen how BMCC and community colleges alike serve a vital service to their community. And this does not serve true only to my experience, but other students that I have seen as well. Joseph Lord is an amazing example of this. Joseph Lord was the other individual that was selected on the All-Oregon academic team. He was a retired truck driver that at one point of his life could not even imagine the opportunity to advance his education and further his career. However, through the affordable options and opportunities that BMCC offers, he was not only able to pursue this goal, but he's also been able to strive and succeed in doing so. Like I stated before, I'm a student at George Fox University, and I'm actually currently in the process of interviewing for a summer internship at a major corporation. And during this process, I stopped for a moment and looked at my final draft of my resume and realized how much of who I am today I owe to BMCC and the community college experience. Joseph Lord and myself are only two examples of the countless individuals that are impacted and influenced by community colleges and the different opportunities that they offer. BMCC is more than just a school. It is a community hub that is focused on empowering and progressing its students in both academic and career fields. And every day while I was there, I could see this goal continually achieved. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming. And when you want to run for the legislature, call me up. We're always looking for bright young people. Cam, to you again, Andrea. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cam, I was just going to say, in the absence of Dr. Toda, there's your soundbite.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson, tomorrow?
There's one of the closer. I mean,
there was one
Andrea
of the
students trying to speak here. Real
Andrea
quick.
Wants to speak. Okay.
So, again, for the record, Andrea Henderson. With the committee's indulgence, we do have one more student that's only here today. If you could take another 2 minutes to hear from the student, his name is Damian Sanchez from Future Connect.
Some of the members have 10 o'clock meetings.
Okay,
so
I'll be here.
I'll stay.
Some of ours have been. We don't have a caucus meeting, so we're free.
Oh. Okay, let's hear from them.
You don't have a caucus? Oh, okay, so great.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chairs Monroe and Comp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Damian Sanchez, and I am a student at Portland Community College. I graduated from Benson High School in Portland, and before I graduated, we had a coach from the Future Connect program at PCC come out and speak at my high school. Mainly about applying at PCC and applying for this scholarship. Prior to this, I had not given college much thought, and at the time, I only thought of completing a two-year degree or a certificate. That soon changed after I frequently met with my success coach and enrolled into the required courses that that come with the program. The Future Connect program connects you with the coach who works with you on your goals and who demands a lot of you while in college. I learned skills that have helped me improve, not only as a student, but as a young adult as well. The program has many opportunities for students and has personally opened many doors for me. Thanks to the resources that this program provides, I was able to partake in a study abroad program to Central America. This happened for about two terms last year. And during my trip, I witnessed adversities and inequalities of the underrepresented populations within those countries. And upon my returning to Portland, I felt compelled to help my community here with the populations that face similar challenges. And now that I'm ready to transfer, I have been given an opportunity to attend Lewis and Clark College with little to no debt, thanks to a full ride scholarship that is awarded exclusively to Future Connect students from PCC. I have the utmost respect for everyone on the Future Connect team and at Portland Community College. Their advice and guidance has truly been a great help, and at times I might feel overwhelmed with the stresses of college life, but if there's anything I've learned from the success coaches, it is how to make wiser choices. Overall, the Future Connect program and PCC have helped me find my passion, and I will be earning my bachelor's degree with little to no debt, so you guys can imagine how great that feels.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Okay. Any final words?
We'll be back tomorrow.
We will see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Sorry.